This is Monocle on Design, Monocle's weekly look at the best in architecture, craft, furniture, and fashion. I'm Nolan Giles. We're dedicating this program to Portugal, looking at some of the designers and makers across the sunny nation. On today's show, we'll take a tour of a number of Lisbon studios producing ceramics, homewares, and furniture. The designer Hugo Passos reflects on a shift of attitude within the local manufacturing industry. Plus, we meet the designer Noé Duchefort-Laurence, whose studio takes its cues from local materials and techniques. All that coming up right here on Monocle on Design. Now, I'm very happy to say that I'm joined down the line today by Gaia Lutz. She is Monocle's Lisbon correspondent, and she's been a part of the Monocle family for a very long time. Gaia, how are things in Lisbon today?
Hi, Nolan. So nice to speak to you. And yeah, things are actually very good here in Lisbon. Things are looking brighter every day, not only the sunnier and the weather is getting nice, but also restrictions are starting to ease, so we can go to restaurants, have a nice outside lunch. So yeah, the mood's looking brighter here, Nolan.
So before we kind of dive into the design scene in Portugal and what you've learned, I'm really interested to know from your perspective. You know, you used to live in London, as I did, and you decided to move to Portugal. You're not from there originally, you're from Brazil originally. What was it that attracted you to Portugal besides the good weather, and how much did this kind of creative energy that we're going to talk about in the show kind of make you think about moving there?
Honestly, Nolan, it was a big part of the move. But when you come to Lisbon first, you think it's a small and sort of quaint and obviously compared to London, a little bit sleepy town. But you scratch the surface and there's all this really dynamic scene of creatives happening from all over the world. And I think they're really well integrated into the city. So what was really nice to in reporting this story for you on these makers that we're going to listen to next is that it sort of confirmed to me something that we always hear about from Portugal, that it really indeed has such a rich heritage of makers and crafts of all kinds. And even though all designers I spoke to weren't always Portuguese, or they weren't doing something super crafty or folkloric or anything like that, they are in some ways tapping into that tradition of Portugal. So they're either using techniques or materials that are prominent here, or in direct contact with old masters. So it's been really interesting to observe that in this package, but also in my day-to-day life, I see that all the time. And this is also something that's really unique about Lisbon, is that it still allows for studios and workshops like these to be based within the city. And sure, we have all the conversation about rent prices in Lisbon. They are going up and all of that. But in general, I think the interest in design and in making is so high within the city that it's possible still for these young designers to find ways to make ends meet.
Well, let's meet these very special three designers now. Let's hear your package.
People coming to Lisbon might want to visit the city's burgeoning restaurant scene, or perhaps its ancient palaces and historical monuments, or to just stroll the picturesque streets of the hilly capital. But there's another way of touring Lisbon, one that is quintessentially Portuguese, and that's by visiting the studios and workshops of the craftsmen and women keeping centuries-old traditions and crafts alive. I decided to get to know a new generation of Lisbon makers that has been reinterpreting ancient techniques into contemporary design pieces with a hands-on approach. On a leafy and quiet street in Amadora district, in the outskirts of Lisbon, Ricardo Jerónimo has set up his studio inside his grandparents' garage. Until recently, this was a rural area, and houses on the street still overlook green hills with orchards up in front, while crowing roosters and barking dogs make up the area's soundtrack. Within Ricardo's studio, nature is just as abundant. Logs and old pieces of wood are laying on the floor to one side of the space, and on the other, Ricardo's finished pieces. Wood-carved spoons, bowls, and kitchen utensils of all sorts make up the products of his brand, Rival, and leave this bucolic district straight to the country's top restaurants and concept stores. Ricardo started by telling me about the work behind these pieces.
I study in the fine arts faculty in Lisbon. The love for wood was always present. The creative need to put my mind in my hands to produce an object was always present. I felt that the profession, the design in Portugal at least, was not giving me what I needed. I spent a lot of time in front of a computer. I always wanted to create, so I turned to wood carving. I do all the work alone, by hand mostly. The spoons or the spatulas or something like that, it could take about 6-7 hours from start to end. I do also the bowls, the big bowls on the lathe. Well, they take a little bit longer than that. Some have to stay to dry a couple of months, so from start to end it's a process. And the wood has an amazing aliveness to it, because when we let it dry after we turn in the lathe, it twists and bends and it gets all kinds of new shapes, and I love that. A lot of people ask me why spoons. I always tell them that my design background to make things that are functional but also beautiful. And the spoon is one of the first objects that we use as a child, okay? And it's one of the last ones that we're going to use as an old person. So it goes through our life. It's used by all societies, all cultures, and it's the same. It's just a bowl and a handle that stayed the same for, I don't know, 10, 20,000 years.
Next up, I'm walking the street of Lisbon's residential Estrela neighborhood to meet Úrsula Duarte and Maud Stepani, the Portuguese-French duo behind Sedimento Ceramic Studio. Since 2017, they have been occupying this light-filled space, also formerly a garage, making artisanal pieces for restaurants, interior designers, and increasingly too, private clients. But not only. As I find out from the ladies, the studio also hosts workshops and residency programs of every kind, where they can share their knowledge and passion for stoneware with the city's residents.
Back in 2017, when we started, we made a big investment with the construction works to have this space, so we decided to do a crowdfunding for the kiln. That went even better than we thought, because people, what we give in exchange for participating in the crowdfunding was lessons. So people were giving money for the kiln, having classes in exchange, and they became our students after. So we are owning the studio. We have residents, so we rent tables for people who already make ceramics. And we have an artistic residency for artists that are not ceramists, but they want to do a part of their job in ceramics. We mainly work with high temperature clay, that means stoneware. We do everything by hand, so we use manual techniques. We're not using the wheel at all. So that means that we are not limited by any kind of shape. Our own limitation is our kiln size. In the past, we used to work more for restaurants, but if a client brings a project and it's a challenge for us, we're not going to say no. We will try, always. Like, we don't do big orders, because we want to have unique pieces and we don't want to be a factory. That's not our kind of work. Even if we have to repeat an object, it's not going to be perfectly the same. We can work with molds. Sometimes when you have a plate, restaurant, or some pieces that are hard to make one by one, because it's not just about the work, it's about time. Sometimes clients don't want to wait 1 year for a project. So we use plaster molds to help. But normally our work is one of a kind, so it's like doing 2-3 objects, big ones.
We have some faithful clients. We have one from Porto, it's a restaurant, and the name is Euskalduna Studio, fine dining restaurant. He orders all the plates, and he asks some different plates with some crazy shapes. This year he comes back to ask some pots.
Yes, fermentation pots, you know. He's a client that gives us some freedom. So you can propose ideas, so it's always good to work with him.
Yes.
Because he thinks a bit outside the box.
finally, we head to the riverside neighborhood of Da Fundo, where Brazilian designer Miguel Saboia has set up his studio together with three other creatives. Since 2019, Miguel has been making bespoke furniture made out of wood for Lisbon's architects, restaurants, and hotels. His simple yet elegant design employs traditional joinery techniques that aren't simple at all, and that he picked up while working with the master craftsmen of this country.
Here, there's a big difference with the kind of value that they give to the handcrafts. And here, I discovered a lot of masters. I started a course in Fundação Ricardo Espírito Santo, a very well-known foundation that teaches restoration and art crafts. There I start to learn about the kinds of woods, the specificities of each wood and the joinery. When I finished the course, worked for 2 years, almost three, for other designers, and then I start my own brand. I try to put the traditional joinery and knowledge in a new design. I can describe my pieces as geometric, strong joinery with simple design that lasts. I share a studio with three creatives. When we talk about a studio for woodwork, it's kind of hard. I needed to find a place that it's big, that I can make noise. It's funny because one of my collaborators, it's my old teacher from the Fundação Ricardo Espírito Santo. We have a very good relation. I really like to put him here with the young generations of creators, with the masters. I don't know, I really like the idea to have a master in my studio.
From Monocle, touring the studios and workshops of Lisbon, I'm Gaia Lutz.
Gaia Lutz there, Monocle's Lisbon correspondent. We'll hear from her again later in the show. Next to Porto, where we meet the designer Hugo Passos. Passos opened his eponymous design studio in 2012, and in the years since has collaborated with multiple furniture companies, including Danish brand Fredericia. The designer has previously called London home and is currently in the midst of a move to Copenhagen. In our discussion, we discuss the shift in attitude in manufacturing since Portugal has begun to welcome the production of goods from many international designers. But first, Passos explains how visiting the people that produce his designs can actually spark new ideas.
Sometimes you're in a factory and they're so used to making a certain piece or using a certain technology that for them it's mundane or they don't see any interest in it. For us designers, sometimes that's, well, okay, but that's fantastic. What is it? And, oh, that's just a boring something. And usually for us being creative, or as it should, we can flip it into something interesting or new or updated. I was launching a marble table with Fredericia, which was an update from the original one we did in 2016 in wood. For some reason, we started playing with the idea of turning it into a stone table, a marble table, the same design. And we did not know that you're not supposed to work marble like wood, of course, like carving. So in the wooden table, we have a carved top, which creates this slim profile. We just thought, oh, we'll do the same thing in marble. So then we went to the factories and they were so surprised, but again, very excited because it created a very interesting product. And even the guys in the factory were very proud and said, well, I think we're the first ones to do this, or it's very unusual. So it came from an idiotic idea. If you were a knowledgeable guy working with stone in the past, we would have never thought that this would be feasible. But of course, through a lot of testing and a lot of work, we made it and it became very successful. So it really came from being naive and not fully knowledgeable of the material properties sometimes and the techniques to work the material.
And maybe just on that philosophy or that approach, a bit of a battle between a designer and client, I guess it's similar in terms of the collaboration between a designer and a manufacturer, and you kind of outlined that. In Portugal specifically, are there any particular characteristics of this kind of conversation? Is it easier to do that sort of business there with factories as a designer? Is it more difficult? What were your kind of personal experiences, I guess, being Portuguese too, and heading up into these, you know, manufacturing bases and really trying to get something beautiful and you know, creatively minded out of the factories?
For me, being Portuguese and having grown up here, it might be a little bit different from a foreigner coming in. When I was younger, I felt that it was slightly castrating for the nationals, if you want to call it. If you were Portuguese and young and you would go into a factory and try to get something prototype or made, and because, again, you're young, you would be a little bit patronized, if you want to call it, because there was this closed mentality about new things, which has changed completely and dramatically. That's one of the reasons I went to London, because I couldn't find a good balance of feeling respected as a young creative person. It always felt like, you know, I was treated like the young kid who knows nothing, instead of being, okay, but you can do it this way. And now I think it's changed a lot because big companies have started producing in Portugal. And these different ideas arrive, but they don't arrive from Portuguese people. So they start accepting that this is what's going on in the world. It's normal to develop something new and spend time and find solutions. Mm. So it's changed a lot. And because of the production capacity in Portugal is so good, and the quality can also be so good in many, as you know, in the fashion industry is insane. You know, the amount of companies that produce in Portugal is incredible. The furniture industry as well, even the more technical, like, you know, Leica cameras are assembled in Portugal. So there is this knowledge and this precision. But the fact that the international companies started coming over to Portugal opened the minds of most industrialists in the country to new ideas and to realizing that it takes time to create something a little bit new or a little bit fresher. It's not just about doing things well as you've done for the last 100 years. It's also a pride to develop something new. And this is what I think has changed in a few companies in Portugal, is this pride developing something new and then finding new solutions and new methods. Now I feel like there are some companies that are really pushing forward and a little bit more open. And I think it's a good period.
Do you think, you know, when you're basing yourself in Copenhagen, or when you're traveling around and meeting international furniture companies, do you become a bit of an advocate for what can be achieved in terms of making in Portugal? I mean, obviously every furniture company kind of has an established tradition, but in a way they also need to be creative too, and they need to kind of look beyond what they've been doing in the past to move forward. Are you pretty outspoken when it comes to the quality of things you can get done and the creativity in Portugal? How do you kind of have that conversation with potential clients?
As you said, most companies, or most of my clients, have already a very long relationship with their manufacturers or the way they produce their furniture. But when there is something that I feel that could be done in Portugal, I usually, of course, suggest. So the Piloti marble, the stone tables we talked about earlier, they were developed and made here. So it was a very natural thing. And even from the company, they said, but you have great quarries in Portugal, right? So why don't we come over and we start developing it in Portugal? It has happened in the past, and I hope it happened again. If I feel something is good and should be developed in Portugal, of course, I suggest it. It always helps to keep the industry in the country alive. And I think it also brings more knowledge of the exchange between cultures, because if you're talking about a Danish company coming to produce in Portugal, it's quite a different culture. And this makes it richer, I think.
My thanks to Hugo Passos there. We stay in Porto now to meet one of Portuguese fashion's biggest success stories, the label La Paz. With an aesthetic inspired by local fishing communities, the brand's signature range of clothing has earned plaudits around the globe. To find out more about the brand's DNA, and to understand why Porto in particular is a great place to start a business, we spoke to co-founder José Miguel de Abreu.
La Paz is conservative, you know, it's pretty basic in terms of design. So we like to rely more on the fabrics and textures and the experience of the people wearing our clothing. It's pretty much the people who surround us, you know. I used to say that we are Paralians, we live by the sea. So there's a very specific dressing code because people tend to live a lot outdoor. And so, I don't know if you know, but me and Andre, we surf a lot, we spend a lot of time outdoor. So there's all these fishermen communities with a very specific dressing code. We want it to be very transversal in terms of age target. So we have kids from 18 year olds till like these mid 70s or 80s, and the clothes will fit pretty much everyone in that range. We surf in this little fisherman's village, you know. So you really feel the clothing is important in their daily lives. It's not only a matter of style, of looking good, but it's also something which is very important about what they're doing on their daily life. At the beginning, it was very important to live with that and trying to translate that into what we were actually doing, you know. When people come here to our shop, and when we take people to these places that I'm talking about, they totally get the idea, you know, because they feel that it's genuine. We are very near to all the factories, so all the production process, it was very helpful for us at the beginning. If you're living in London or Paris, and if you're producing in Portugal, all the process between designing something, checking the prototypes, advancing with a specific model, it can take a few months. Here in Porto, we are half an hour from Guimarães and Barcelos, and where all the main factories actually are. Sometimes you can visit three or four factories on the same day. Portuguese creativity were always, I'm sure that it existed at a point, but I feel that it was a little bit on the background. Our generation, the people start more to travel and, you know, travel around, seeing different things and studying abroad and coming with, instead of immigrating, they developed their own ideas here. That was the main thing that that I see that happened during the last decades. We see that one brand pushes another. I think there's this wish of people helping each other during all the process to see how it works, to explain everything. We feel that there's new wish of people and like doing new stuff, and instead of like being obsessed with bringing stuff from abroad, starting their own projects here in order to export.
My thanks to Jose Miguel de Abreu. He was speaking to this show's researcher, Charlie Filmer Court. And as we're heading back to Lisbon for our last item on today's show, we're going to welcome back Gaia, who spoke with our last guest, Noé Duchafour-Laurence. So Gaia, can you tell me a little bit more about Noé, the type of work that he does, and this conversation you had?
Noé is such a fascinating person. He had a whole career shift when he moved to Portugal 3 years ago. Career and lifestyle shift, I think a lot of people have when they come to Portugal. So he was working for very big brands back in France, Montblanc, Air France, Paco Rabanne. And he stepped away from all of that when he came here, and also the rhythm of industrial design, to do something much more experimental and local. He established his own studio here, and he provides a platform for his explorations into different crafts of Portugal, but not only design. There are all sorts of like collaborative exhibitions with a musician or a photographer or a chef, because he's not coming here with an idea or with a style, with a brand, and he just wants to work with makers to execute that. He's sort of letting the people and the crafts guide his creativity. So he has no no idea what his next project will be. He'll just visit a region and learn from these craftsmen. And the work is very collaborative, and it's very, they're both equals on every project, the makers and the designer. There's not a distinction between both, and things will just come up. So it's a platform where that's allowed a lot of freedom to him. And I think you can really see from our conversation how that freedom has opened new doors for him, not only as a designer, but also as a person, and a way to bring together different aspects of his life and interests under the same umbrella, let's say.
Well, Gaia, he sounds like an incredibly inspiring designer. So let's hear from the man himself. This is Noé Duchefort-Laurence.
There is a lot of craft, and you see it in your everyday life in Portugal. Every market you go, every place you go, there are still people working with their hands in a very humble and beautiful way to make objects which are still used. It's not like a folkloric art, it's really like for everyday life. This I discovered while I was traveling around like a tourist, because I wanted to see the country where I'm living. And I had this project in the back of my mind for years because I was looking at friends who are chefs working with the elements they have around them. And I said, but why as a designer I don't do this? Why I still work with objects which are made one part here, the other part here, with a very long distance, and for a client which is at the opposite side of the world? It's strange to not having this notion of what's close to you, what's nearby. And finally, I said, oh, okay, I have to place myself as a chef, working with the garden I have around and trying to find a way to, and working with the seasons also, you know, this kind of notion. And that's how I created this project Made in Situ, after where I said, okay, I have to discover Portugal through craft, through people, through material. I will try to reveal and to make project through these moments and encounters and transform this and show it in a place in Lisbon. It has to be located in the city where I'm living, not out. And then perhaps the project will travel. That's another thing. But for the moment, it's really important for me to base the project here.
And can you tell me a little bit about the project you've worked on for a lot of months that was here before? And now I'm surprised to see there's something else coming up. I don't know if you can already tell us a little bit.
So we have like 5 or 6 projects going on in the same time, because at the beginning we were looking at Portugal like a white page, and there are a lot of things to create and to work on. It's fantastic actually how you feel energized by the possibilities when you arrive in a new country. Also, and a country like Portugal is a welcoming country, so we had these 5 projects or we have like 5 or 6 projects going on, and one came up more than the others at the first time. It was a Barroneco with a Swenga technique. A Swenga is a way to cook the pieces in the ground. We met 2 craftsmen who are in Moreiros, which is in the north, north center, north of the country, Shana and Carlos. And these people were open to discussion, but then they were not really ready and prepared to do a Swenga for this collection. So this way of making the pieces. And I understood why, because it's finally a lot of work and investment, personal investment, not only. And they don't care about the fact that you can pay or whatever. That's not the point. It's really about if every thing they are doing, it's a commitment, and they wanted to do it for a specific reason. And that's the beauty of working with these people at the end, with Shannon Carlos, but many others we met. Is that when they don't say yes or at the beginning, because they think that if they do it, they have to do it properly, and it's a manner of a personal investment. I think it's a very personal project. When I came to Portugal, so I had a furniture or whatever coming by car, by van from France, and me, I took my car to come to Portugal. When I crossed the borders of Portugal, it was in August 2017, and there were a lot of fires at this time. And all this area was full of fires, and I went through places which has been burnt. It was super impressive because it was beautiful in a way, to be honest, because it was fields of only black dust and these trees which are like skeletons. And also disaster, because you can really feel that nature has been taken out. And also it was disaster for Portugal. There are a lot of dead. This summer it was a very hard month. And then I said, okay, I will do something with this. You know, Portugal is the biggest cork producers in the world. And for sure, if you want to work with artisan extra ones, you meet some people who are doing some cork. And I went to a company who is in the south of Portugal. They are doing some blocks of cork made of different aggregates, etc. They are quite interesting because they are using colors. But I didn't want to do some blocks of cork for no reason. I didn't understand exactly the fact that we were using aggregates of cork and gluing it and putting it to make blocks. And then I saw on one side of the factory there was a huge amount of cork which has been burned by fires. And I said, what do you do with that? Oh, we take out the burned part and we use all the cork in it. And I saw the beauty of the resilience of the cork. And I thought that we should do a project about that. So making our own blocks with this cork which has been burned, but without taking out the black parts and trying to reveal the material in the project we are doing. The next collection is about that. So when you connect all of that together, you finally discover that this moment when you cross the border, you arrive in Portugal, you have a fire, and then you redo something with this kind of trauma.
How do you find yourself connected to the wider scene of designers perhaps more like you in the sense that move from other countries here? Are you finding that Lisbon increasingly is getting more exciting, the synergy of people? How do you see yourself in Lisbon, in the wider scene, let's say?
A lot of people are interested about craft. A lot of people, more and more designers are connected to this because there is a kind of direct relation with the making, which is very important for us. I know that people also come to Portugal to work this way or to work at least with artisan, but it's more like to do with their own brand and things. I think at the end we have kind of an environment of and we have a frame in a made in situ, which is by the project, by the way it's made, etc. But it's not a brand, it's a platform, it's a place where we're going to, and every project is going to be totally different.
That was Noé Duchefort-Laurence speaking to Monocle's Gaia Lutz. And that's all we have time for on today's show. If you're keen for even more design-related listening, then catch our 5-minute midweek sister show, Monocle on Design Extra. It airs every Thursday. Today's show was produced and edited by Maylie Evans, with editing assistance from Sean Hickey. Our studio managers are Steph Chungu and Louis Allen. Thanks to our researchers, Nick Manise and Charlie Phil McCourt. And of course, to Gaia Lutz for coming on the show. I'm Nolan Giles. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.